Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll hear from YouTube's global head of health and the VP of Google Kids and Families to talk about the impact of the online world on our children. Later in the show, we'll have some top tips to reduce your mobile and broadband bills. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. I do hope you're well and that the sky is blue wherever you are. I can see a nice blue sky out the window here, so that's making me happy. We have a very busy show this week, and regular listeners will know the issue of online safety is something that I'm particularly passionate about. Before Christmas, we did our Behind the Screens roadshow. I did live events in Dublin and Cork where we met parents of both primary school children and secondary school children to hear about the reality of parenting in the digital age. We had a panel of brilliant experts providing insight, answering questions, giving advice, and it really hammered home to me how much more needs to be done to educate not only the children in terms of how to behave online, but also the parents. We have covered extensively over the last number of weeks the conversations and debates around a potential social media ban, as well as digital age verification for online access. And one of the points I come back to time and again is that this is a seesaw, and there are different stakeholders or interested parties that have a role to play. Parents, absolutely, on one side. And on the other is the big tech companies. They are the ones who we willingly give over our information to get access to these services. We are the ones who turn to them for entertainment, escapism, news, whatever it may be. And while there has been progress made over the last number of years in relation to online safety, there is more that can be done. So I've been eager to chat to the big tech companies about what is being done on a practical level to help parents navigate these choppy waters, because there's no silver bullet solution, as I'm always saying. And I was delighted to head out to Google's HQ here in Dublin earlier in the week, because they were hosting a series of events and talks with experts in relation to online safety. It was their Growing Up in the Digital Age Summit, and it took place in the Foundry Building. So I went down to Google HQ on Tuesday evening, and while I was there, I met with Mindy Brooks, who is the VP of Google Kids and Families, as well as Dr. Garth Graham, who's YouTube's Global Head of Health. I spoke to them, as you'll hear, for quite a while about a broad range of issues, but I started by asking Mindy about a product that I mention all of the time, and that is Google Family Link.
I mean, one of the main benefits of Family Link is the flexibility of the tool. So our goal is to create a parental control that can flex to any family style. So one family here in Dublin might be different, a family in a different country. So we want to provide the flexibility. So for example, I want to be able to set app screen time limits, set school downtime, and be able to manage purchases. I can do that for my family. Another family might want to do, I just want to manage bedtime and see their location. So we offer that flexibility through Family Link that I think really helps empower parents and also create a dynamic that works well for their family.
I'm going to just add on to that. In addition, when you take that into the content space around, say, YouTube, then you can get more age-appropriate experiences for that child when you kind of choose whatever child setting you want. It's particularly for tweens between 9 and 12. And as the child, not to get too clinical, prefrontal cortex starts to develop more, this idea of age-appropriate information is really good for their overall development. And so it's a combination of as Min was saying, being able to set the right things for your family from a managing your home standpoint, and it's good in the age-appropriate context for your child development.
And for parents who say, I'm not tech savvy enough to know how to navigate this, or I don't have the time to do this, what would you say to those parents?
Well, we went to make the tools super simple, but we also just launched on Android new parental controls within the settings. So it's just three taps. That's all you have to do to set on-device parental controls. So we're trying to offer solutions for the parent that's like, I don't have time to go and dig into how to set up a parental control. Go to Android settings, go to parental controls, and then you can set it up in three quick taps for their device. So that's one way we've been trying to help support parents that we've heard around the world say, I'm just exhausted, I can't manage this.
And it can be overwhelming. And I suppose, again, for parents who've never used Google Family Link, what sort of information will they be able to see? Because for, say, a 14-year-old, you want to give an element of autonomy to your child. You don't want to be snooping on every single thing they're doing, but you want the peace of mind that they're not doing anything they shouldn't be. Right. So how does Google Family Link balance that seesaw?
Yeah, we want to balance child's right to privacy as well as making sure parents have the information they need. So we do things such as, like, here's their screen time. Here's where they're spending their screen time. We're also able to help manage that, set down time during school. So just really helping a holistic balance there without giving too much granular information such that a child feels like their privacy is completely invaded in certain ways. So we really try to balance that for a parent.
And Garth, one of the areas that I'm really interested in, so you referenced that tween period, which is a fascinating one, but I'm very interested in the slight elevation above that, right? So from 12 to 15, because there's a lot of hormones happening, there's a lot of drama, but whether it's at school or sports club or gymnastics or whatever it is, these kids are going through a lot already. And to not have autonomy over their digital life, that can be a point of stress in the home. How would you advise parents navigate putting controls in place but not snooping, trusting them but not giving them free rein? Again, it's a very difficult balancing act.
So I'll answer from two aspects. So one, when you look at what the American Academy of Pediatrics and some of the other related bodies recommend, is this idea of graded autonomy. So I always think about it like, you know, my kid, he could only ride his bicycle out to one certain point when he was nine. Then by the time he was 12 was another point. And then by the time he was 14, he was kind of, you know, getting more out there in the world. And if I didn't give him that graded autonomy, he wouldn't learn the skills, the kind of incremental developmental skills. So you want to give kids the freedom with the boundaries, but they do need to develop. And so this idea of allowing your child to develop their skills in the digital world, just like you would out in the non-digital space, I think is particularly important. There's certain kind of tips that we think through around that, in terms of, you know, talking about it with your teen, and then after talking about it, spend some time watching and seeing what they're seeing in terms of content, and then being able to set boundaries and then balance. And so as we think through those tips, we start off with talking, engagement, so you understand the content that they're seeing. Setting balance, I'm sorry, setting rules and then setting balance is particularly important. So that's just another way to think through it. But it is a developmental process that is important for any child's development.
I don't know if you guys watched Adolescence on Netflix, but that it focused in on, it was purely fiction, it's first, important to say that, but it did focus in and shine a light on how young people are using phones and maybe some of the coded speak that they utilize and the unawareness or lack of awareness of the parents. For teens who already have access to devices, and the parent might be listening to this now going, the horse is already bolted, the genie's out of the bottle. Is it possible to shove it back in?
Well, I'll start back with those tips I was giving earlier. I would start with that. I would start with, if your child is already engaging in technology, you want to just see where they're at. So you want to spend the time both talking about it, and understanding, and again, in the content space, who their favorite creators are, what's the kind of content they're watching, what do they like, what do they don't like. So you get a sense of who they are and their digital characteristics in that context. And then you're able to then think through, as you think through these things together, what are the kinds of boundaries you'd want to put in place that you come up with together, or what at least what kind of the framework you want to put in place. And the one thing I would say for parents whose kids may be a further along in a digital journey than the parents might understand is that's when you try to think about the concept of balance. And then how do you insert balance? So it's never too late. What you see from a lot of the data is one of the most important things we can be doing with our kids is co-viewing. And it's just meaning you're just understanding. So if they are out, if they're experiencing or, engaging in information exchange, you just want to know what it's about. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say to those parents is start off with co-viewing, engaging. I have to tell you, the amount of soccer-related content that I've consumed just in the context of co-viewing it's given me a huge sense of, both what my kids are doing, but just what their interests are.
Yeah.
Sometimes in those teenage years, you're like, who are these kids? You know, you're like, what's going on? So it helps give you a sense of some of that context as well.
Yeah. I was just going to add, I started my career at Sesame Street.
I heard this earlier on. How exciting.
If you know anything about Sesame Street, it was built around co-viewing.
Yes.
And it was like the power of a parent sitting with a child, watching a show. They learned so much more.
Yeah.
You had shared vocabulary, shared things to talk about, and then you also knew your child. What did they laugh at?
Yeah.
What do they point at? So it starts early. It's also into your teenage years, but like just sitting with your kid goes so far. And so I think that's such a great analogy, starts early.
Yeah.
And just sitting and watching these shows with them or playing a game or doing things together, always matters.
Yeah, when we did our Behind the Screens event last year, we were talking to the child psychologist, Coleman Nochter, who was saying that, phones in the bedroom is a big concern because people might behave differently. We all behave differently behind closed doors. And that is a concern, particularly in that teenage group. Again, from a device and a services point of view and protecting our young people, what would be your thoughts on that in terms of for the parents listening?
Yeah, so I mean, one thing we saw when we started to develop Family Link was we saw in houses when we did research, parents would collect phones and put them in a basket at night. And it was just a practice that a number of families started doing. So we were like, okay, maybe we should build a feature here that helps support this behavior. So we created a bedtime feature that the phones are silenced. You can't have access to it unless it's an emergency contact. So that's one thing that we're trying to do to help support parents that are like, no phones in the room.
Yeah.
And that's their family ground rules. So we do that. Essentially, it's a virtual basket that we are creating and helping empower parents to be able to use that.
I use that as a non-parent and 37-year-old. I have the bedtime mode on. It comes on at 9:15 every night. Everything except my mom and dad is blocked, muted. Grayscale comes on. It's good for my brain.
Yes.
And I do feel the benefit of it. And I think, Gert, that is another important point here that, again, I don't have kids, but role modeling. I've got nieces and nephews that I'm very close with, and I make the effort to have the phone in the back pocket or down the side of the couch when they're around, because they do watch what we do, and you, the parent, can't say, get off your device while you're sitting there scrolling for 2 hours.
You know, you asked earlier a question, which I think many parents sometimes struggle with, which is this idea, is it too late? Or has something happened? And I would say, in a developmental journey, there is always room to steer that development. And one of the classic ways to steer that development is with your own behavior. And if you show shifts in your own behavior, that allows the capacity and the child to start to understand shifts. So the one thing I would say to parents in terms of your listenership is just thinking through what's important to them. And then implementing those aspects. And as you just alluded to, your own behavior mirroring aspects of that. But it's never too late to really kind of think through in so many different ways how you want to shape your child's experience.
I would just say in our research, when we talk to kids and teens, they'll say, my parents a hypocrite.
They see it.
And they say it out loud. Yeah. And they're like, you're really focused on my screen time, but you're texting and driving, or you're on your phone late at night. And so I just think modeling matters.
Yeah.
And like how we set the boundaries ourselves then also helps trickle down. Mm-hmm. But we have to also look in the mirror and assess our own tech use.
Yeah, yeah. No,
because
sure.
I think that really sets the stage.
Yeah, it does. And you mentioned Sesame Street. And again, I'd love to just talk to you about Sesame Street for the next hour. But, you know, one of the beautiful things that I still get when I'm watching it with my nieces and nephews is that it teaches me how I can do phonics with my little nephew, for example, right? It shows you how to be. And I'm wondering, just from your point of view, having come from that place into a big tech corporation, is that what you're trying to do here now? Like bring some of those learnings and influence from the inside? Because sometimes big tech gets a bad rep of it's just whatever.
Yeah.
But this sounds like something that you're truly passionate about. And rather than wagging the finger, you want to be part of the solution.
That's right. That's such a good question. You know, I think about this all the time. Because what Sesame did was use a medium, television, for good. It was an experiment. It started as a complete experiment. Can we actually teach kids through this television? And at that time, what, 50 something years ago, everyone was nervous about what television was going to do to your brains and to children. And so I see myself here in at Google, and it's like, how do we take this medium, lots of mediums, and be able to use it in powerful, helpful ways for kids to help them learn, help them grow, help them explore online, and to do so in a safe way. And so that's really kind of how I see my mission in what we're doing, and really hope to focus our teams that way.
That is such a beautiful answer. it made me think about two things. One, you know, co-viewing with your kids, amazing. You know, I've learned so much from Bluey.
Taking it
into my professional life, you know, keep going. That's exactly right, you know, growing, moving, you know. But it also gone into these principles that we developed on YouTube to try to promote quality content. And some of the principles are around this idea of self-efficacy, learning, creativity, and life experiences and seeing the world. And one of the things being able to look at the vast library of content we have on YouTube. There's so many different experiences. I had to go to travel for work to Indonesia, and my son was telling me about Indonesia as if he'd been there because he'd experienced it through the power of video. And you know, that's what Sesame Street has done is this idea of just opening up experiences to the individual. And and Bluey is an example, but I just remember Sesame Street as a kid, and you know, it opened so much, so much of the world to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, I always come to these conversations from the tech fan point of view, because the example that I gave was, I always give is, I wasn't the smartest, the funniest, the sportiest in school. I was the kid who was good with computers. And that was my little niche, and it's turned into my job. And so when there's talk of outright bans for under 16s, that makes me nervous, because I think the other kids who are 11, 12, 13, who are the same as I was when I was that age, they're going to lose out if they have absolutely no access to social media. So again, in terms of a seesaw, how do we balance that?
So, you know, we often talk about this idea of it's about helping kids navigate in the digital world, not from the digital world. Another example, as you know, bicycling. If I waited till my son was 16 to start having him ride a bicycle, there's so much he would have missed out when he was younger. But also, his skills and capacities would have been delayed more years had he been given kind of that graduated experience. And so, you know, thinking through how we allow our kids to learn and utilize technology well, especially in these more formative years, can have so much benefit as they grow, rather than thinking you're going to keep them in the barn, and then when they're 16, all of a sudden they're gonna have all these capacities. So being able to kind of grow appropriately, and as a parent, guide that growth is kind of our number one job as parents. And so that particularly is important. And the last thing I'll say is, last two things is, especially in the world of video, there is so much to experience. There's so much learning. You know, I was just watching my son the other day doing some stuff around coding, and I'm like, what? How do the kids do that stuff nowadays? And so, you know, there's so much you can learn And the world can be opened up to you, I think, through the power of video. So allowing kids to be able to have that learning experience, I think, is particularly important. And then their ability to feel confident with digital tools.
Yes.
That's another component where we have to have kids understand that these aid in your development, their aid in having them be so much better than we were, even as parents. So digital literacy and all of that's particularly important.
I think what you also see in the literature, just as I'm a researcher by training, and you see in the literature that it's about the quality of the experience. Yeah. It's not about exclusivity or cutting kids out. It's about the good content.
Yeah.
You learn more in those experiences. So I think it's really important to balance that, that there's good information, there's good content that can help kids find their niche like you and really be able to grow and develop a career.
And this is one thing that I suppose we have been talking about on the show over the last few weeks with, you know, brilliant groups like CyberSafe Kids, is that yes, there is a benefit, but we also need both the parents and the tech companies to play their role in ensuring that the content kids are consuming is good content, is age appropriate, and that it's easy to block, report, or call for help if and when that arises. So from that point of view, what is Google doing today, and what are you continuing to do?
Yeah, I mean, that is core to kind of who we are. So thinking about this idea of content, we publish on these kids quality principles in 2020, and then we just did teen quality principles in the last couple of months. And what these principles are, there's specific kinds of things that are, to Mindy's point, are drive quality experiences for kids online. So I think, things like, again, like I said, how to treat yourself well and others, life experiences, particularly for teens, thinking about well-being, thinking about growing independence. And so for us, we use these principles to drive the content that kids and teens consume, along with personalization. And so from our perspective, this idea of quality content, quality experiences that Mindy was saying earlier, I think are just really key. And we take that responsibility very seriously. The other thing I was going to say is we also, I think broadly from the Google standpoint, look at this issue of digital literacy. So we're about to announce this big grant, $20 million grant, around creating a digital literacy curriculum for kids that'll be open sourced and multilingual. And so I think we understand our responsibility and acting on that. We want to figure out how we continue to empower the children and the external community, and then also continue to work with parents too. So it's really about kind of working with the whole ecosystem.
One area that I feel I need to hit on, because I'd be remiss of me not to, is the social media addiction trials that are taking place in the US. And I've had a number of parents emailing me over the last number of weeks as this has been, you know, in the news, and they are concerned because the court seems to be struggling with the definition of addiction. There seems to be a lack of hands up and acknowledging if 16 hours a day on a device is too much, and if that counts as an addiction. And I think parents, and I always feel happy when parents reach out, because it makes me think, okay, these parents are on it and they know and they're aware. But then there's a cohort of parents who may not be aware. And so I just wonder, in that context, is this an example of where big tech companies could and should be doing more, rather than offering young people a notification that says you've been online for 3 hours today, that it automatically shuts down? Like, is there a technological solution to a problem like this?
Yeah, so I think from our perspective, there's a lot of things you can do to make the experience that kids have online be a positive, enriching experience. And if you think through, not to get too clinical, you know, the DSM-4 criteria on the concept of addiction is that it has created a negative impact on your life, and that there are negative dynamics in this. And to Mindy's point earlier, there is so much to kind of to underscore, and even you think of your own life experiences that kids can use to grow and have a positive concept in terms of digital consumption, especially in a world where 10, 20, 30 years from now, there is further evolution in terms of technology. And I think your life's a perfect example of that. The question is, how do you enrich your kids So that they're able to have all the benefits and grow in a very different world. And so part of what parents, and I think about this a lot as a parent, parents should continue to think through is how do we create a quality, enriching, growing experience for your child, both kind of, you know, in the digital world and outside in general. My son, the other day, just because we watched, I mean, countless hours of soccer. In fact, right now I can feel my phone going off. I knew exactly what he's telling me with the West Ham game earlier on today. And you know, part of what I've seen a lot of that is how both soccer in his you know, in his game, and then soccer he consumes and information. There's been that interchange. He's learned a lot. He's learned how to move faster, pass quicker, and he's learned to develop as a player in other ways that his coach may not have given him that concept. And so I use that kind of generic example to say that nowadays skill development can occur in so many different ways. I couldn't imagine that back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, it was when you showed up for practice, that's when you learn, and when you go home, you kind of wait till you learn for practice again. But, you know, he's learning constantly. And so I think thinking through that learning ecosystem and how in a digital context it's beneficial, and then you circle that back into the real world, is particularly important.
Okay, my final question for you both, and I've ended every interview I've done with this question over the last little while, and that is, the tech world is weird at the moment. There's a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of conversations around AI. And for students in this country who are filling out their form, deciding what they want to do when they grow up, there are some people who would be super nerdy and they would just put down programming. Then there's other people who are looking at the current jobs market going, geez, I don't know what I'm going to do. What would your advice be? And for somebody who's not necessarily a tech brain, as in ticking all the stereotypes of what we think of when we think of tech brain, why would you encourage them to get into the tech sphere?
I mean, first of all, I would say explore all the options. Mm-hmm. Explore what you're interested in. I never dreamed I would be in technology. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be doing clinical intervention in schools around the world, and then I got into tech. So I would say go where you're interested, because that interest will help drive you. So that would be one thing I would say. And the second question was?
Just for people, again, who don't fit the tech stereotype. Oh. So I remember a few years ago, I was with a tech company, and they were saying, you know, it takes all brains, the artsy ones, the poets, the whatever. Yeah. Every brain is kind of a vital part of the tech community.
Well, I think we're probably we're probably great case studies that we aren't the cookie cutter people. Like, I am a developmental psychologist. Yeah. I never once dreamed I would be in technology, never once dreamed I would be working with Muppets at Sesame Street. And then I'm now here at Google. But my skill fit the need, which is I have a background that understands kids, the ages and stages, and I deeply understand how we can build products for them. So that intersection was a really nice place to be. So I would say that I'm definitely not one that fits that mold. And so I think anyone can be there. We have researchers from all types of backgrounds. We have artists from all types of backgrounds. And I think that's what's so important. And that's actually where innovation is going to happen.
Yeah. Awesome. I have to co-sign and underscore and highlight just so much of what Minnie just said. Because it's two things I would say for your listeners. So one is, technology is so ubiquitous that the concept of how we can use technology to improve any aspect of life will only continue to unfold. And so that gives you the opportunity to pursue what you care about the most. And if you want to take a technological turn to it, I think that capacity will always be there. But I love what you said, and in fact, I'm going to use it more at home because we have these debates at home all the time. And I do say to my kids, if you're pursuing your passion, the concept of what the future holds will evolve with you. And many times we try to figure out where things are going to be 10 years from now. But I love what you just said. Would I have ever thought that of 10 years ago I'd be at Google? I wouldn't. Am I like having the most amazing experience ever? Yes. And so what I would just say to your listeners is, pursue the thing that makes your heart sing and that drives your passions. And for those who have a technological interest, there's opportunities and a natural evolution in the course of the world for you to be able to blend those.
Guys, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is Mindy Brooks, VP of Google Kids and Families, alongside Dr. Garth Graham, YouTube's Global Head of Health, speaking with me a little bit earlier this week at Google's HQ. It was a fascinating conversation, and it was possibly the first time I have met executives from a big tech company whose backgrounds are in the medical fields and child psychology and child well-being. And I really enjoyed the conversation. I could sense their passion for their work. And it's not that this was sort of a whitewash of, oh, big tech is great because we let you in the front door. Those two people that we've just heard from, I do think they are part of the solution. I still do think there is more big tech can do. I do think there's still a need for better education, easier to navigate tools, easier to find tools for parents and indeed young people. But I have to say, I really did enjoy that conversation. I have some stats for you here now. So Google Family Link, searches for how to set it up in Ireland spiked 400% in the last year. In Ireland, there's been a 300% increase in searches of how to set up parental controls over the past year. That's fantastic. Like, that makes my heart so happy because it shows that parents know that parental controls are needed and they are looking for the information. So I always say it, Google Family Link is great. Cybersafekids.ie is a brilliant resource because they have details on what you need to know, what apps are out there, how to put parental controls in place. It's all consolidated, I suppose, in one space. So if you are on the lookout for information, it is there. But yeah, as I said, I'd love to know your thoughts. Tech Talk at newstalk.com. We'll be right back.